Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman joined by the head coach after a fantastic win against the New York Giants this past Sunday. Congratulations, Gus. Got to feel good having a week of work after a victory.
It's great. You know, to be able to celebrate like we did and then capture the next couple of days of hard work. And players did really a good job coming back from that. And we're ready to go.
And I think every week a coach is always most proud of one thing. If you had to pick one thing from that game, and I know it's hard to do because, I mean, there were so many different components and it's a team sport and it's got to take all components. But if you had to pick one thing, what would it be?
I think the resiliency, you know, how just resilient this team is and how they persevere. It was incredible, Logs. I mean, here we are down 21-3 going in at halftime. And to see the look in the eyes of the guys, it wasn't bad. It was just like, okay, we got to regroup, but we got to regroup now, and we got to go out there and do it. It's going to take everybody, all three units, and just that kind of talk that took place. You know, just what a credit to the players on this team.
Yeah, and let me spread it around a little bit. I give you credit. I mean, you got a 1-10 football team. You go in at halftime, you're down 21-3. There's a lot of teams that would have just said, "That's it." Packed it up and said, you know, let's just play the rest of the game out and maybe we can do better next week.
Well,
they didn't do that.
Yeah, no, they didn't. And really the guys that are talking to them in the locker room for the majority of the time are the position coaches and the coordinators. You know, and they're coming up with the plan. All right, here's what we're doing the second half. And you don't have a lot of time. So, you know, the coaches, it was a total team effort. Coaches, players, everybody responded. And you don't want to get in the habit of doing that too many times. Yeah. But to see a team do that was great.
Well, there's obviously a lot of components that contributed to that. The one that I thought that I just couldn't wait to see, and I'm glad it worked out this way, because at the end of that ball game, Eli Manning, who had engineered 31 game-winning drives in his career, five of them in the postseason, gets the ball, takes his team down, and leads them to a field goal to take the lead. And I'm not trying to be a pessimist here, but I was happy. I was happy because I wanted to see your offense with Blake Bortles have an opportunity, and Blake Bortles in particular have an opportunity at him getting his first career game winner and to play exceptional football when it counted most, and he did that.
Well, I think there's one thing when a coach says, okay, here we go, let's go get this W, or when the players are saying it. And that's what took place that last drive. The players were talking that way. Hey, let's go execute. Let's go get this thing done right. And on the offensive side. And it took all 11 on the offensive side. But it really did. It took all three units. They had their chance to make plays, and they did. It's just the offense ended up finishing it. And then after that, the defense got the turnover.
I was really appreciative of what you said, because, you know, Monday you have your press conference each and every week, and it's carried live on Jaguars.com. And I don't ever attend the press conference. I'm down there watching film and getting ready for the television shows and everything else, but I always have it on my laptop. And the way you started out your press conference, where you wanted to speak to the fans and you thanked them, because it was truly amazing, where you're down 21-3, and all of a sudden after halftime it looked a little sparse, and you're like, uh-oh. And I think they're all just getting a beer. And then all of a sudden they're all back in, and at the end of that game, the crowd was fantastic.
They were incredible. And we said that when we get excited, you get excited, and we hurt, you hurt. And they truly are going on this journey with us, and we appreciate it. And the players felt it now. They said the environment, how loud it was, and when we needed them, they were there. So you can't give enough credit to our fans.
And in your defensive line, what another tremendous day. And in fact, Monday we had a little bit of a glitch technically for the all-access television show, but the last play in which you guys closed the game out, which you had four down and you rushed four guys, and Sandarek Marks was the one who ended up getting the sack, and I think Chris Clemens was the one who was officially credited with the cost fumble, but you got four guys, and three of them, the guys that all had one-on-ones, were all winning. on the very first play. They're all winning. The only one that wasn't winning was Tyson Alualu, who was getting double teamed. And I made the point that, you know, there was a coach that, and you probably know him, Joe Cullen.
Yeah.
Used to coach the defensive line here. Of course, he called him the Rushmen. He had a quote, and I had to share the quote with everybody because it's one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard. He said, I want to coach defensive linemen or Rushmen. He said, with the attitude that they're like a blind dog in a meat house. And I made the point that there was four guys, there were four blind dogs in the meat house on that play.
Well, you know, that's what a D-line hopes for that situation. You got the lead, two-minute situation. You can pin your ears back, and you know what they're going to do, and it's time. So, all those D-linemen, they live for that moment. And, to see that and get it done, because, as a coordinator, Coach Babich, he's starting to call out the defenses as he sees it, how he's going to play through it. And you're having these conversations before you actually get into the two-minute drill. And then for it to end on the first play, I mean, awesome. Awesome feeling.
Yeah, tremendous. And coaches should be proud. I was also wanted to bring this up about Jed Fish to have the – I guess you could say he let it rip. That was kind of my commentary on Monday, that he just let it rip.
He did. You know what? And that's what we said. You know, we went into the game against Indy having a mindset to run the ball and see what would take place from there. But, we played with more freedom, I give credit to Jed and the offense, the whole offensive staff. Especially, how about this? It's second and 15. We just had a run, holding call.
Are you talking about the last drive?
Last drive.
Well, you had a second and 15 earlier on.
We had
a false start by Wellesley.
Right. And then, you're saying, well, every coordinator in the National Football League is throwing the ball there. And we came out and ran a read option, and Blake went for I don't know how many yards on that. But, that's not what they're expecting as far as on the defensive side. And, to come back and go run in that situation, give a lot of credit to the offensive staff for having a plan and sticking to it. It showed.
And a big part of that drive, the first second and 15, which was after the false start by Wellesley, which, he's all fired up, young player, he's getting his opportunity, and he can't wait to come off the ball on a run play, and he gets the false start. You come back, and Blake hits Marquise Lee. I guess you could say that this was a breakout game for Marquise Lee, wasn't it?
Well, Marquise has been playing really well in practice. And then I think the Indy game, when he came in there and had a big play, and played the amount of plays that he played, I think he felt like, okay, I'm finally contributing to this team. It feels good. I'm playing a lot of plays. I'm helping this team. And you could just sense that was a big part of it, that game. And then to come into this game and have a couple big catches as well. So, his arrow's pointing up now. He has a lot of momentum on his side, has a lot of confidence, and he's practicing that way. So he's on a good little roll right now. We just got to keep that going.
How important is that in your coaching experience for young players that are going through that learning curve to get a little positive result on game day, to allow them to gain the confidence that's necessary for them to carry forward?
Well, I think it's big. And, Jerry Sullivan is a fantastic wide receiver coach and does a great job with those guys and has a distinct style. And it always takes some time for these guys. I mean, he's pretty strict, pretty structured on what he's looking for. And once they really capture the whole meaning of it, they kind of take off. You can start seeing where they're winning on routes and things. And that's what I saw with Marquise. It was just, we had to be patient, let him get a feel for it, and he's starting to put it all together right now.
Are there other players that maybe don't stand out? I mean, offensive linemen or other players that are kind of in that same category, whether they're rookies or first-year players, that you're starting to see them gain confidence, like a Marquise Lee, that maybe the average eye from the stands or even my eye from watching film and then live don't see?
Well, I think, guys obviously like a Luke Bowenko. I think of him, all the way back in the beginning of the season to where he is now. And he's always had a lot of confidence, but I think now when he goes into a game, it's about preparation and playing at his highest level and doing the extra on the field. So, he's a guy that jumps out. But these guys now, who are guys under the radar? A lot of these rookies have been playing now, 10, 11 games for us.
It's funny you bring up Luke Bowenko, because that's the guy that I was wanting to kind of go there, because there was one – it wasn't an actual performance of a play that I really noticed watching film. It was the end zone copy, and the end zone copy focuses in on pretty much the offensive and defensive linemen. But there was one play in particular to where – he is communicating to everybody, identifying the mic and everything else, and you could just see with his body language, it was something that you hadn't seen before.
Yeah, he is. He's you know, the center has the opportunity to be the leader of the offensive line. And just by the position, he handles the ball all the time, makes calls, things like that. And just, you know, you're looking for a certain type of personality that, you know, really people, the linemen gravitate towards and can trust. And he seems to be developing that. You know, I think the more and more he plays, the more and more comfortable he gets. But we're really excited about him and his future.
All right, let's stick along the offensive line. Austin Pasdor, boy, I mean, pretty significant injury when you're, people always talk about, okay, he has a strained hamstring or a pulled hamstring, but then the term ruptured hamstring starts getting tossed about. That's not good.
No, you know, and he needed to have surgery with it, and it's unfortunate because, you know, he had a tweak in the hamstring, and he played through it and felt good about coming back. And offensive linemen, generally, it's not like a receiver. You know, not very often do they get extended to where it bothers them. But he just got in a position where, you know, he was stretching out, and then he got hit from behind, in the chest, and then overextended him, and it just didn't hold up. So, unfortunate injury, but you know, Austin, he's a tough man. He'll come back. What's sad about is that he had an injury last year and had to rehab it all during the off season, and now he's got another situation like this where he really wants to spend time in the weight room and get strong and get big and those things. So, but he'll have enough time to do that.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I remember I hit kind of a stretch in my career where all of a sudden you're constantly rehabbing, you're going in for surgery at the end of the season or at some point during the season, and you never feel like you can accomplish what you wanted to in the off season because you're rehabbing.
Right. Well, and hopefully, you know, with him, you know, it happened at this point. So he's got the month of December, January, and where he can come back and you know, still get a lot of good work in.
You had mentioned earlier in the week about how, you know, replacing him, because, I mean, if there was ever a week in which, boy, the attention on replacing a right tackle would be it when you're getting ready to face the Houston Texans and J.J. Watt, obviously it's going to draw a lot of attention. You got a veteran guy in Sam Young and a rookie in Josh Wells, an undrafted guy from James Madison. You guys were talking about how you would let that play out. How is that playing out?
They did a good job. You know, I think Josh Wells gives us the advantage of he can play left tackle and he can play right tackle. So there were some times when Sam Young was down, and it's just because Wells, he gave us that flexibility. But, you know, we just felt like with Sam in there as a right tackle, when he played when Austin was out, he did a really nice job. And here it is. Now we have that right tackle spot. Want to take another look at it for a day. If it took another day to look at it, we would. But we really want to try to get somebody in there and get the reps underneath them. And Sam, they both did a nice job. I think it's just Sam's experience and where he's at that felt like we'd give him the nod.
Well, if there was anybody that you would look at and say physically they could match up with a J.J. Watt, I mean, just appearance-wise, I mean, Sam kind of looks that part anyway. It's going to be a great challenge for him.
Yeah, great challenge. And, I've seen with our team this year more than I did is that these guys like to step up to these challenges that they have. You know, it's like a Demetrius McCray. Well, you're going against Dez Bryant. Okay, I need this. I need this at my point in time where I am in my career. And, you know, Sam Young. Okay, I need this. This is going to help me get better and really get to where I want to go. So we have a lot of that mentality. So Sam, you know, we won't even blink with him being in there. He'll do a good job.
All right, folks, the Blood Alliance and the Jaguars Gift of Life Blood Drive is Tuesday, December 9th from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the East Touchdown Club at Everbank Field. Donors will receive a T-shirt, a donor license plate, and a hero necklace. Plus, you'll be entered to win one of 12 pairs of tickets to the Jaguars-Titans game on December 18th. More to come here on the Gus Bradley Show, right here on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, we're talking a little bit about Marquise Lee there. And your other rookie, Allen Robinson, is now on injured reserve, required surgery on his foot. How's he doing? I talked with him briefly a little bit before the game, and he seemed to be really positive.
Yeah, he's a first-class person, man. I'm just so excited about Allen Robinson. And when you sit down and talk to him, don't you feel it, Logs,
yeah,
with him?
I mean,
just great, really guy, competitive. So, and it hurt to not have him a part of this right now, but he'll come back. He'll be ready to go. Now, with that being said, I think that, you know, with injuries come opportunities. And a guy like Marquise Lee, although he's probably Allen Robinson's biggest fan, he also felt like this was a time for him to, all right, now it's not a, hey, it's Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson, Cecil Shorts, I'm going to roll in there. Now he's the guy when we go three wides. And I think that just added confidence to his game. And then to go out there and have some good things happen, like I said earlier, he's just in a good place right now.
When I watch these three young guys, Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, boy, this past weekend brought really to the forefront of my mind because, you know, they had the Jaguars Alumni Day here on Sunday. And in attendance were Jimmy Smith. It's been a long time since he's been back.
Jay Smooth.
Jay Smooth. That was his nickname. And then Keenan McCardell, who used to wear the loudest suit you've ever seen on road trips. I mean, banana yellow, bright orange, like Dreamsicle orange. But it was great watching these two guys grow together because, you know, Keenan was a low-level free agent that that we were able to acquire from the Cleveland Browns, and Jimmy Smith was basically an unwanted guy that spent time, I think, in Philadelphia and the Dallas Cowboys. And to watch these two guys grow and to compete within themselves and then also amongst themselves was very special.
Well, it sounds like that. You know, probably completely different personalities, too. And that's what, you know, we've got a good receiving group. I mean, Cecil Shorts, tremendous leader for those guys. So we got that going for us along with his talent. And then, you know, Marquise, Allen, Hurns, and Allen Robinson, just to see him. But they kind of, you know, Allen Hurns was probably the guy that had the most success early just because he had some familiarity with the system. And then all of a sudden, Allen Robinson picked it up and the techniques. And then all of a sudden, now Marquise Lee. So they developed at different stages, but all very talented.
So with Alumni Weekend, did you have a chance to catch up with any of the alumni briefly before the game or anything?
Yeah, I did. We had a chance with Jimmy that afternoon. Saturday afternoon, I was preparing for, you know, the Saturday night, you know, talk to our players and had a chance for him to come over. And we just sat in our office for about an hour and visited. And it was the first time I met him, but a great conversation. Well, you can tell now he was a competitor, mm-hmm. and it was very important to him. Knew all about our team, Log. Knew all about our players. Oh, yeah. Knew all about the receiving group. We talked about every one of them. I mean, really into it. And, boy, what a privilege to be able to sit down and visit with them.
It was neat to watch the go route to Marquise Lee when you guys had the funky formation where you had two tackles split out wide left. And the defense at that time was still trying to communicate, so it looked like they were caught, I don't want to say off guard, but a little slow in reaction. And then Marquise Lee catches the go route. I don't know how many times that I watched Jimmy run that go route, just where he just flat out ran by a defensive back and the ball was thrown and he just ran underneath of it and made it a beautiful play.
Yeah, you know what? It you don't see much single safety, I imagine. You got to have both safeties back when you have a talent like Jimmy. So, you know, and that's what I think these receivers, you know, like we said, Cecil, you know what you're getting. You can count on and love what he brings. And now these younger guys, I think they're just going to keep getting better every year. And, you know, to see how they develop all together and where they end up, I think it's going to be a cool journey for them.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back. I want to talk a little bit of quarterback. We're going to get to the quarterback early here in the Gus Bradley Show right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
For season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. I guess your quarterback, Blake Bortles, we had him on a radio show that I do with Mike Dempsey, Jaguars Today, earlier this week. And, you know, every time that I talk with him or I'm around him, I continue to be impressed with his humility and that he recognizes things that he has to do better at. And that he almost embraces the learning experience and that he knows it's going to be challenging. How important is it for that personality trait to be had in a quarterback playing as a rookie and then really a young rookie because he came out early from UCF for your football team going forward?
Well, it's a great trait. And Blake and I have had many conversations in this. And the way he talks, the humility he has, so important in helping him get better. At the same time, you don't want to have it become a negative self-talk, you know, and that's what he's learning right now. But, I mean, he's such a natural. I mean, you don't have to really tell him much. As he just gets it. The guys gravitate towards him. He's a natural leader. He wants to be in situations like he was in on Sunday, and he just loves that part of it. And so I imagine you had a good conversation with him on the show. And, yeah, he's a guy that you love to be around.
He impressed me because I brought up, you know, he was talking about, you know, the quarterback position in the National Football League is something that's just, it's unparalleled. And I was asking him about, you know, the whole thing and how much is demanding of the quarterback in the NFL. And he said, yeah, he said he remembers when he was at UCF and he'd sit on the couch and he'd watch the NFL games and he was somewhat critical, you know, of watching these guys play. And he says, now it makes me very understanding of where they were at. Because, you know, I'm sure, I mean, just much like, you know, any other college player is like, man, I can do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what's so special about that? You know, and so he was kind of very, very humbled by the experience where he's at now, reflecting back on where he was at watching on the couch.
Well, you know what? He has a standard. I truly believe this with him. He has a standard of what's acceptable play, and he's not there yet in his mind, and it drives him, you know, up the wall that he's not there, and he's got to try to figure out a way to get there. And but he is going to enjoy all these little steps along the way, and I think that's why you have a guy that's, you know, doesn't lack the or doesn't have any of that fear, that you know, he just wants to go out there and compete and go for it. We'll take chances, and you know, it's, like I say, he's a good man to be around.
In this past game, you guys went a little bit more up tempo. Obviously, you weren't able to sustain it early in the ball game because you got to put some first downs together to be able to continue to run up tempo. But how important is it to have up tempo? Because, you know, when you go back and you look at Blake Bortles' performance, whether it be all the way back to the preseason and throughout the regular season, it seems like a lot of the success that he has had consistently, or his most consistent, has been in the 2-minute drill. So was the desire to go a little bit more up-tempo maybe a reflection of saying, hey, look, these are some of the things that he has been doing well, and maybe it simulates a 2-minute?
Well, I think it's a combination. When you do up-tempo, you find out what do your players do well, what can they, you know, line up and just run and go, and you can play faster. Without a doubt, you play faster that way. And I think our team, that's, you know, as you talk to the players and you visit with them, that's where they feel most comfortable. And I think when you look at yards per carry, yards per attempt, passing, completion, all those stats as a whole generally went up when we were in higher tempo. And, you know, that's the fact of the matter. But you got to get involved into it. You got to have some success to get into those tempo situations as well.
Okay, one of the things that I'm sure you would like to see improve upon is protecting Blake Bortles. I mean, what has it been? Quarterback's been sacked 50 times so far. He's been sacked a high number of times. How do you get these guys, and because it's everybody, and a lot of people when they talk about protection, they always want to say offensive line.
Right.
And it's not always the case. And sometimes it's a back, maybe it's a tight end, maybe it's just working together. How do you get that part of the game improved with the remaining games that you have, which are four?
Right. Well, when you analyze it, it's you know, these sacks are coming from different positions and different people, and you know, some are on the offensive line, some are with the running backs and protection, some are the quarterback. You know, he can get rid of the ball quicker. And so you just got to look at it, and then, you know, you attack it, find out what we have to do, and then the position coach handles it within his group as well, reinforces it, and then you go out there and keep working on it in practice. But, you know, I wish it'd be easy if it was just one person or, you know, one position group, and he said, okay, here's how we got to do it. But, you know, everybody needs to take responsibility to get this corrected. Now we come into Houston. And they've got a great player out there that has been known to get some sacks, you know, Logs. So it poses another opportunity for us as well.
Is this week a red jersey week? Because, you know, what I mean by red jersey week is that, you know, every week of the NFL season, your scout team looks typically will have somebody simulate the great player that the opponent has, whether it be an offensive, you know, wide receiver, running back, or whether it be a defensive player that you got to account for. Is J.J. Watt a red jersey type player for you guys, and do you actually use that as part of your game preparation where you identify, here's 99 every time?
Right. If you know, you identify him if it's certain things are going to, you know, work towards his way or protections. But, you know, I do think it comes back to you as a player. And, you know, Tony's sitting right here. And I know he would say the same thing, that if he goes out there and you're the left tackle and you use good technique and you play within yourself and you do what you're supposed to do, you should be able to play very well and you should be at your best. And things will go your way. Sometimes a guy might get by and make a sack. Those things happen. But primarily, if you do those things, what you're taught to do and stay within that, you'll play very well. With that being said, J.J. Watt elevates that mindset. You say, I really got to be on it this week. I really got to trust my technique, and I really got to trust, you know, all my teachings, and then, you know, go out there and perform at that level. So, you know, that's the kind of awareness that he brings.
Is he a game changer? When I say a game changer, because, you know, when you guys come to the line of scrimmage, a lot of offensive lines come to the line of scrimmage, and you have a guy of that caliber, like J.J. Watt, and you're trying to get the matchups that you want, you know, whether it be slide protections or anything else. And I'm not looking for game plans or anything else.
Right.
But, I mean, is he one of those guys that's a game changer that will dictate sometimes what you do up front?
He is, but they do a good job of moving him around. You know, he'll play left end. He'll be over the guard. He'll play right end. They move him around. They'll run, you know, he'll just straight out, you know, edge rush, and then he's involved in twist games. And so, you know, to go into it in a game and say, okay, now if he's here, we can expect this. If he's here, you know, I think there's a point in time where you say, hey, you have awareness. He's a really good player. Let's be on it. But it still comes back to what we do. And let's go out there. We can't, you know, take care of all these situations. And we got to trust our abilities as well. And I think that's what our players are understanding right now. And that's generally what it comes down to, how well we're going to perform.
All right, well, let's open up some phone lines when we come back from this break. Folks, if you want to get in, 355-NFL-1 or 355-6351. You're outside the Jacksonville call-in area, 1-800-355-NFL-1, and we'll take your calls right after this here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jaguars fans, do you want your photo or tweet on the massive new Jaguars video boards? Hashtag JagsGameDayLive and be a part of the game experience. The social drive brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealerships. Back here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we're going to open up some phone lines, folks. If you'd like to get in, 355-NFL-1. Outside the call-in area, 1-800-355-NFL-1. And let's go ahead and bring up our first caller this morning. This evening. And bring up Chris, who is in Arlington. Good evening, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
About to go in the office and do some more work, but I'm driving, so I had a few minutes. Heard you guys were asking for some callers, so I called in. Hey, great game this weekend. Got a chance to get there. I didn't get there till the second half, and I guess I got there for the best half. Wanted to ask you some questions about some draft picks. I noticed back in the 90s, early 2000s, you guys drafted, the Jaguars drafted a player from Georgia Southern University, Kawani Thomas.
Kawani Thomas.
Yep. D-back, do you remember him?
Yeah, I do.
And seems like when the NFL has Georgia Southern players on their team, they seem to do better because those guys are winners. And if you look at the senior class this year of Georgia Southern players on there's quite a few of them that are, you know, have been, you know, All-Americans in one way or another this year. Also, All-Conference, Sun Belt, undefeated, 8-0. These guys are winners, man. They're the only, these seniors and also redshirt seniors on this team, they were the only players in the whole country to go to the Final Four 3 years in a row.
Chris, you've got to be a Georgia Southern alum.
I am.
I love it, man. Hey, how about your running back we had last year at the Senior Bowl? Now he's with the Vikings. Have you been following him?
Jerick McKinnon,
Hey, he was great. I really enjoyed coaching him in the Senior Bowl. And to see the progress he's made with Minnesota, he started some games, you know. So, they've had some success.
Did he blow up the combine or what? He was 6-star in every category. He did more bench press reps than most offensive linemen.
I love your passion, man. I love you for your players.
Wow.
That's great.
Speaking of alma maters, are there any players in the National Football League from North Dakota State?
Yeah, Craig Dahl with the San Francisco 49ers now. He's a backup safety, plays special teams. He's playing. So I'm trying to think. A couple guys on practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
One down in Miami, one with the Jets. So, yeah, there's a couple, but it doesn't sound like Georgia Southern. I don't know. We can compare to that.
We were actually kind of we were having a conversation here during the break because, you know, the head coach for a time was Brian Van Gorder, who was at Georgia Southern. If I remember right, he left here as the linebackers coach and took the head job at Georgia Southern for a bit, I think, at one point.
Yeah, great guy. He was just in. Notre Dame was down recruiting and got a chance to see him. So, a lot of tradition over there at Georgia Southern. And then you really give them credit. I mean, they're moved up to 1A now.
Yeah.
And they went in there and won the Sun Belt, you know,
pretty
undefeated.
Good.
So, yeah, it's good.
All right, let's go to Gene on the west side. Wants to talk a little bit of the Giants. Good evening, Gene.
I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you. And, Jeff, I think you do a wonderful job every time you're on the radio or television.
Checks in the mail. Thank you.
I actually went out of town Sunday. Had all my grandkids in town, and we went down to Mount Dora to do the Christmas lights and shop. But I taped it. And as I'm leaving at halftime, I haven't seen a moment of it, don't know what happens. I look at my neighbor, who I know watches it every week also, and said, "How's it looking?" And she said, "Don't even turn it on. You don't want to know." So I'm disappointed. I'm driving down to Mount Dora. I feel bad because I really do care about you guys. And have no idea what's going on. I come home, I go to bed, I get up Monday morning, everybody's out of the house, and I put it on about 10:30 and start watching. And I want to tell you, I had the most wonderful feeling watching that comeback. I'm just totally elated about the development of the receivers and of Blake. And I've been having a lot of arguments with people about Blake's, what he's doing now compared to what he did when he first started. You know, with the interceptions and so forth, and people losing a little bit of confidence in him. I think he's throwing the same kind of balls into the same kind of coverage. It's just early, for some reason, he had a lot of success with it and hasn't had as much lately. Maybe he's thinking a little bit more. But anyway, the call is to let you know that we are watching. Everyone cares. Even when we're disappointed, we care. But it was wonderful to watch that win on Monday, not having any idea whatsoever that you guys had won. And I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, thank you so much, Gene. That's very well thought out. All those feelings that you went through, I think we all went through. But, you know, the players are improving, and to experience that, what took place in the second half, what was special and something great to be a part of.
Well, he brought up Blake Bortles, and one of the comments that I also remember from talking to him earlier in the week, he talked about, because I asked him, I said, what's the biggest difference? He said, you know, in the National Football League, he said, nobody's open. He said the windows are so small to where, you know, you've just got to find a way to get it in there. And that's probably the biggest difference. I remember talking to quarterbacks that I played with through the years of the National Football League, and that's the one thing that they always brought up, the difference between college and the pros.
Well, and I think, you know, what happened, the Indy game, the first game we were in, we were behind, and teams played a little bit softer coverage. You went out there and had some success, and then the next game, teams are trying to figure him out and our offense, and he had some more success. But then all of a sudden the coverage just got a little bit tighter. And we started to run the ball, so we saw a little bit more man coverage. And then there's that, you know, you always got to stay ahead of the learning curve. And that's what he was battling. And boy, he competed, did a nice job. And now he's at the point where, again, really clean football last week with no interceptions. So he'll go through this. We knew there was going to be a learning curve for him. But I'm just excited to go along with him on it.
Baby steps.
We want to push it fast.
Yeah, you want to take a sprint, but sometimes you got to take baby steps. All right, folks, time for a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll take a few more calls if you want to get in. 355-NFL-1. Outside the call-in area, 1-800-355-NFL-1. And we'll also talk a little bit of the Houston Texans offense when we come back right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And this segment is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Back here on the Gus Bradley Show, Jeff Logman and the head coach, Gus Bradley. Let's go ahead and take another call here before we talk a little Houston Texans offense. Let's go to Aaron in Orange Park. Good evening, Aaron.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Gus.
Hey, how you doing, Aaron?
Hey, I just want to call in and say I love you guys. And, Jeff, like I said, or everybody says, you do a great job, man. You really do a good job of breaking down and talking to it and getting technical about it. And, Gus, I got to say, I love your energy, man. You freaking get me excited. And I was at the game on Sunday, and I want to talk about the energy. I mean, at the end of the game, I'm not going to say I wasn't disappointed that first half, but you brought it home in the second half, and I was going nuts in the stands. I mean, I was knocking old ladies over. I didn't care. I was just getting wild. And
don't knock the old ladies over, Aaron. Come on.
You know, I try not to, man, but, you know, when, you know, we're running back and getting two defensive touchdowns. And anyway, I'm excited to meet you. I think tomorrow I might get a chance to meet you, Gus, at, I think they're bringing the troops out for a military.
Yes, yes, we are. Are you going to be a part of that?
Yeah, I'm going to be a part of that, and I can't wait to come out there and meet you guys. I got some stuff I'm going to get autographed, but like I said, I'm a Jaguar, do or die all the way, and keep doing what you're doing, and we believe in you, man.
All right, hold on. Before we let you go, Aaron, how about giving a shout-out to your guys?
Yeah, 125th Fighter Wing here in Jacksonville, Florida. Going to be out there tomorrow, along with all the other troops. You know, you guys always do a good job, and you know, I've got to meet a lot of players, and you guys come out and, you know, climb on the jets and really in touch and in tune with the community. And, you know, I just I'm on my way home from work right now, and I just want to take the opportunity to call and say thanks and just tell you how much we love what you're doing. So.
Well, that's awesome, Aaron. Let me tell you something. You know, let's get back. I mean, the game, that's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it and appreciate you hanging with us. Now, as far as tomorrow, logs, there's going to be over 750 military
At practice.
Yeah, at practice tomorrow. So it's just an incredible event. And to be a part of it, our players absolutely love it. We'll talk about it in the team meeting, and they'll be fired up. And then have them out there watching our practice and being a part of it. And then afterwards, we get a chance to meet them, hear some of their stories and the autograph sessions. So it's really a great day tomorrow. We appreciate everything they do for us.
Well, and Aaron, thank you for your service. And all the men and women in our service academies and services all across our country. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little bit of Texans offense and take your calls, 355-NFL1, right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logan with head coach Gus Bradley. And Gus, the Houston Texans offense scored a team record 45 points against the Tennessee Titans this past weekend in Houston. And when you watch that game, you sit there and you go, wow, because there's so many components of that offense that are playing at a high level. Andre Johnson's been doing it forever. Arian Foster's been doing it for quite some time. Led the league in rushing a few years ago. But the guy that really kind of popped on film is DeAndre Hopkins. And I know you guys classify explosive plays of a catch of 16 yards or more. And if I remember correctly, he's averaging over 17 yards a catch, the second year man from Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, that's 60 catches over 17 yards a catch. So, and the long of 76. So, yeah, he's really come along. Sometimes receivers, it takes them some time. You know, you're starting to see, here he is, end of his second year, and it's starting to click for him and making some big plays for him, playing with a lot of confidence. And, you know, the running game. You know, when you have a running back like Foster, he has over 900 yards rushing and averaging over 5 yards per carry.
And I think he's been inactive for like three games.
I know.
So he's averaging over 100 yards a game.
Yeah, he's, you know, so you're starting to put together. They've always had some talent. They had some injuries last year. They've got some guys healthy. The quarterback situation was there's some instability there last year. But Fitzpatrick's really done a nice job. He's a guy that can catch fire now. I mean, he can get on a streak and really do well, just like he showed last week with six touchdowns.
I want to say the first time that the Jaguars ever faced Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think he was a quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, and he ran around forever. Ended up getting a win, I think, a few years ago, if I'm remembering correctly. But the thing that this guy can do, he's like fifth, I think, amongst active quarterbacks in yards rushing. He can extend the play, and he can create opportunities with his legs as well, even though he's not a young man.
Yeah, he can, and extremely intelligent, understands coverages.
Now, wait a minute. Just because he went to Harvard doesn't mean he's intelligent.
Well.
Now, if he went to Virginia, I'd agree
yeah,
with
I know. You would. That's the thing. No, he is. I mean, I think it's all of his experience that he has. And he just makes really good decisions. And how do you know? Well, last week, I don't believe they gave up a sack last week. And you talk about, you know, the offense line. But that really comes back to quarterback making good decisions and quick decisions. And with being in the league for 10 years, you see that.
I know that in the last three games, the offensive line has only given up one sack. They didn't give up any to the Tennessee Titans. And that's really been probably the biggest reason why that their offense has made the jump that they have is because of that offensive line. Because a couple of years ago, I think they had like three Pro Bowlers along the offensive line. And Dwayne Brown, their left tackle, is back to playing at that Pro Bowl level that he was at 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's playing very well. And, you know, they've got a couple draft picks. The kid from UCLA. I'll let you say his name here.
I've actually practiced this. It's Xavier Suafilo.
Yeah, we really liked him in the draft last year. And now they drafted him, what, the end of the first or early second?
Second round.
Early second round. And he's not starting for him, hasn't started for him.
Started one game.
Yeah, it's because of injuries, but now they got guys back. So it kind of gives you an idea about their talent level in their offensive line. When a guy drafted in the second round is not starting for him consistently. Well,
but the guy that makes them better, I mean, Arian Foster, last week against the Tennessee Titans, it was, you know, 3rd and 17, they hand the ball off to him on a draw play, and he converts it.
Yeah, he can make people miss. He can jump cut. He can accelerate. Runs with power. Anytime you're facing a team with a zone scheme like they do, it really challenges you because again, we talked a lot about in the Cleveland game, this battle of wills. Who can, you know, stay in their gap longer and penetrate and have gap accountability? Who can do that longer? You know, us wanting to do that or them trying to create it. And that's the battle that's going to take place again on Sunday.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back more with here with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jeff Loggeman, the head coach here on the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, the head coach of the Houston Texans, Bill O'Brien. I enjoyed watching him, you know, kind of followed his career, obviously, with the New England Patriots, and he had great success with them. Leaves the New England Patriots and takes the job after Joe Paterno's situation in Penn State. Does a great job at Penn State. I think he had an 8-win season, then a 7-win season. Now he's the head coach of the Houston Texans. You've had the opportunity to meet him a little bit, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. We spent some time together at the owners' meetings and really a good man. I really enjoyed. We talked football. We talked first year head coaching stuff. You know, just background and you know, a guy that is just a genuine guy. You really can gravitate towards.
Well, and he's got. You look at his staff, and obviously Romeo Crennel's been around the National Football League for a long time. Their defensive coordinator, but the offensive staff for the most part is very young and inexperienced at the National Football League level, but doesn't appear to be bothering them at all. I mean, they're running the football very well.
Right, and he does a good job. You know, he called. I went back and looked and said, oh, was he the offensive coordinator when we played New England in Seattle? And he wasn't. He was in Penn State that time. But, you know, you're digging, man. You're trying to find out as many, you know, film opportunities as you can with him coordinating to get a feel for his philosophy and in critical times what he likes to do. And but, yeah, he's done a really good job. You see that flavor, a little bit different than what they did in Houston last year. They'll get to some empty looks and let the quarterback make some decisions. But, you know, so you feel that flavor of what he did in New England as well.
Well, whatever that flavor is, the one flavor he definitely has with his football team is takeaways. They lead the National Football League with 28 takeaways. What are they, plus 11 turnover differential? That's an impressive number for a 6-6 football team.
Well, clearly affected the outcome of the game, too, because there's multiple times, you know, teams were inside the 10, fumble, you know, or created one and returned, you know, blocked a field goal, returned it for a touchdown. Or, you know, these things happen in critical times when teams were driving. So, yeah, they've had a tremendous impact on the outcome of the games with those turnovers.
All right, so the last thing before we take a break here, the Jacksonville Magazine, the recent one, the holiday edition, has a very nice feature about your wife on the very back story. And the very last line, and I'm going to read this here for folks. Your wife says that, talking about, you know, spending some time together. And
we got to go. Joe's motioning logs. Joe's, see his fingers?
Catch
he's telling you, you got to get going.
We'll talk to everybody next week here on the Gus Bradley Show.